All right. Hey, folks, what is up? This is going to be a flash cast. Pete Casella is joining me, one of our resident insider writers here at Quiet Spec. Chaz is always joining you. What's up, Pete? Thanks for giving us some time here.
Thanks for having me, Chaz. We got a lot going on right now. We got standard bannings and a new set all in 1 week.
We sure do. So for those of you that don't know, I try to do this segment, you know, as often as I can. The last time I tried to do this flash cast, I actually ended up doing it with an insider, Efren, an insider most of you know around the QS Insider Discord, went really well. So there was some positive feedback about continuing this kind of segment when we can. And this was a perfect time to do that since you had some free time for me. So I like to, you know, we kind of like to have the cast and then we just try to fill in these flash casts as quickly or as often as we can. So this will actually be the second flash cast. And on the docket, we like to keep this really short. Our main topic is the standard bannings. Tarkin and I didn't get to discuss this on the main QS cast, but Pete, so let's just kind of start it off. What did you actually think about the bannings? This was back on the 15th. Did you agree? Did something need to happen? Is this like too much? And then we can kind of talk about, you know, you as a player. And then for those that don't know, Pete actually runs two stores. So you can kind of elaborate on that as well, Pete.
Yeah, okay. All right. So currently I run and consult for a store in Florida, and I also am a consultant for a store in Chicago. So I kind of bounce back and forth and I play when I can. The standard bannings, to me, I agree with them kind of at their fundamental core for a couple of reasons. And I know that this is kind of met with some backlash on the Pro Tour with a lot of players kind of voicing their distaste on Twitter. If you follow Owen Turtenwald, he's certainly at the forefront of people really not happy about the standard bannings. But the top decks, obviously Team Renergy being the big bad boogeyman in the room, and Ranamap Red kind of rounding out the rest of the majority, probably 3 out of 4 competitive decks. And that's difficult for kind of everybody for a couple of reasons. Now, if you enjoy the decks and you play them, that's good. But if you are a competitive player who would like to see some more innovation in a format, so standard in this case, you're not really going to get innovation as the format kept getting more and more warped by the percentages towards these two decks. So the bannings kind of needed to happen. And in addition to that, these decks are mainly comprised of cheaper cards, commons, uncommons. You look at the actual bannings that the deck took, it was a 5-cent common and a 50-cent uncommon. In all reality, Rogue Refiner is just another 3-2 beater and a Tune with Aether is just a mana fixer. It allowed the decks to function, but they really did need to take a hit. They were too strong. And this allows stores to kind of market themselves a little bit more and redefine the financial market and standard and say, okay, well, now there's all kinds of possibilities. There were already some kind of decks that got left by the wayside. Winding Constrictor, for example, the 2/3 snake from Aether Revolt that had itself in Walking Ballista and created the black-green Constrictor archetype, that got completely woodshedded by the Team Renergy deck. So it just didn't exist for a very long time. So that has a possibility to come back. And on top of all of that, we've got the Rivals of Ixalan set just dropped officially legal tomorrow. So we have a lot of possibilities. Merfolk, not the least of the possible archetypes we might see coming out of Rivals of Ixalan. There's some more dinosaurs and some possible ramp decks. So we're looking at a very potential varying format as we move forward.
Yeah, so every time this kind of happens, the format kind of garners some interest again. I mean, I think people were just kind of sick of everything that has been going on the past year and all the bannings. I talked a lot about, you know, and just really briefly, that their design philosophy kind of really got away from them. And it was going to have to get a lot worse before it got better. And I wasn't actually convinced that we were done with banning. So here we are. I think it was a good time to do it. I thought that maybe they could have skipped this one and, you know, kind of went with the bannings before Dominaria since it was a standard PT again. But I think doing it now was fine because they have a new set that's dropping. Everyone's already kind of set sick of energy and all that stuff. But it does set like a kind of a scary precedent. I mean, Pete, I mean, we're talking about like lay of the land with upside, a 3-mana 3/2 draw card. But I mean, you have to take everything in its context, right? Like lay of the land with, you know, some added energy is pretty good. So, you know, I know it's kind of, you know, we've been through some crazy bannings in our day, but you know, thinking back on Stoneforge Mystic and Jace, I mean, but, and even, you know, earlier than that, the artifact lands, but, you know, I think it just needed to happen. The thing that's good now is that Standard, and like you said, all these stores are kind of remarketing themselves and kind of seeing, well, what's next? And you talked about Rivals being legal today, or tomorrow rather. It was already legal on MTGO, and we're already seeing some interesting stuff. I mean, there's still some Scarab God. Folks are kind of still doing these like good stuff decks, still trying to hold on to energy. But it did open up the way for some brewing. We're seeing, you know, Black Green Constrictor come back, like you just said. We're seeing God Pharaoh's Gift decks kind of surface again. And we're seeing a lot of Glintsieve Siphoner and just these value decks start to really take shape.
Well, Grixis shouldn't have really been a surprise to anybody. If you really look at the bannings at their core, they essentially banned green out of the energy decks. But some of the most powerful decks some of the most powerful cards in Teemer were the blue-red cards, the Whirler Virtuosos and the Glory Bringers. Those are the cards that could really dominate a game. Rogue Refiner and Attune with Aether were just designed to help fix your mana so that you didn't get, you know, kind of screwed on your mana, and to draw you cards so you could have some resiliency. But the deck is plenty strong without those cards. What I'm afraid of right now is the kind of scary precedent, like you said, that they're setting with the bannings now, because so they release Kaladesh, and you have energy decks, and you have a very dominant performance by pretty much all things energy for as long as the deck exists. And now you're in a pinpointed spot where you created what's basically a fake resource. Energy does not exist within the plane of Magic. You can't land destruction it. You can't touch it because it's in an outside zone. So you had to balance the game around the current energy cards that exist. And you did that with Aether Revolt and with Amonkhet and with Hour of Devastation, which I believe was the first set officially that was consulted, that they consulted pro players at Wizards of the Coast to try to help them create some cards, which is why we got a Braid, for example, which is a really good card as far as answering things. But now if you're banning the energy decks that you balanced cards around when it comes to Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, what becomes now the new boogeyman of the format? Are some of the cards going to be too strong because they were designed to kind of trounce these energy value formats? Almost every good energy card is a creature. Like that's something that we can pretty much genuinely agree on, other than maybe Harness Lightning. So does that mean that we're going to wind up in an era where removal is too strong, where you have a deck like Grixis, which not only can still abuse the energy mechanic, but it also has very powerful removal spells? Because of A, its color combination, and B, because they had to release answers to these things that were happening. And on top of that, this latest set looks like it's very ramp heavy. Like they're releasing a whole bunch of bombs, like a lot of these dinosaurs. You look at, what are good examples? Gatala came out, Etali came out, Nezahal, pretty much the elder dinosaurs. If you can get to a point where you can play any of these cards, you're generally winning games in Standard, because while we do have powerful removal, we don't have specifically like a Doomblade, which would probably be really good 6 months ago, but wouldn't be so great today. It would be kind of scary right now.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, it's like you said, it's a weird time because we have Rivals coming, is out on MTGO, but it's out tomorrow officially, the street date. But we have a Modern Pro Tour. Then we don't see really, like, we'll have Standard, kind of large Standard events. We'll have GPs and in that nature. But the next PT is until after Dominaria. So people are going to be kind of focused on Dominaria. You know, as a player and as a store, are you foreseeing a lot of movement? I mean, we've seen some already in terms of energy's kind of taken a hit. Ramonette Red has taken some collateral damage. I know you kind of, before we started casting, you said you have the price list in front of you. Is there stuff that you want right now? Or are you, I mean, Tarkan and I also discussed the fact that there can be some renewed interest in Standard, but are you more looking towards Modern, or are you very much keeping up with Standard until Dominaria? And are you coming back to Rivals and Ixalan? Like, are you letting it ride until Dominaria, or do you want this stuff now?
All right. Well, you're kind of at a high risk, high reward scenario here with standard cards, because when, and a lot of people know this, especially financially, but when Khans of Tarkir block came out and the fetch lands warped the format and standard became too expensive, a lot of people jumped ship and they said, well, if I'm going to spend, you know, $500-$600 on a deck, it's going to be a modern deck. I'm going to have something that I can continue to play that's not going to lose value upon rotation. So as they moved forward, they knew that standard kind of took a hit, and it's fairly common knowledge that standard has been kind of getting rebuilt from the ground up. We had a couple really difficult sets as far as getting people to participate in standard, especially locally around the places that I have existed. And now you're still kind of in this rebuilding process where you have to set up for the future. So I do agree with the bannings and the time frame, because that means that they are setting up for the standard regrowth in Dominaria. Dominaria is going to generate incredible amounts of buzz. A lot of people were kind of had assumed we would never go back there. They've almost Doctor Who'd Dominaria in such a way where you could never go back there, and they actually are. We're getting new card or old school style cards in theory in a new set, which will generate some interest when that time comes. So what the bannings did is that allows for a little bit of a current metagame to formulate with the remaining standard cards that are around from Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, the cards that will stick around when Dominaria hits. And we can kind of see what's more powerful and what isn't. And, you know, obviously these things can change. But if you look at the price guide for Rivals of Ixalan or any set right now in standard, Ixalan is another good example. Some of the lower end cards, once you get past the very top. And now remember, this is Rivals of Ixalan on release day. There is not a lot of perceived value in the set. Obviously, Kumena is very popular, but that's for modern reasons, which I'll jump into in a second. Jade Light Ranger, theoretically the same thing. But other than, you know, the Planeswalkers, essentially, there's very few cards, you know, above $8. And on top of that, and this is just kind of an aside, I am not a believer in Blood Sun. I think a lot of people are. They want to try to abuse the card. But you have to remember, you need a 3-mana investment to be able to then abuse the lands that you want to abuse, like Lotus Veil spiked from Weatherlight, for example. Because if you have a Blood Sun out, you can just play a land that is a Black Lotus. Well, that's fine, but you have to get to 3 mana to do it. So how much mana are you really abusing? So I'm not a huge believer in Blood Sun. I think that that price tag will taper off. And then below that, you just have a lot of the overinflation that comes with any set when it's released, where you have some legendary creatures that might be wanted for EDH will stay up there in price, like Azor, perfect example of that. And as you move forward, things are going to go down in price. They did in Ixalan, although some cards did go up, like Search for Azkanta, because it saw Eternal play. In Rivals of Ixalan, it doesn't look like it's going to make a huge Eternal splash, except maybe for the Merfolk decks in Modern. That's really the big thing I think a lot of people are looking at right now. But if you can justify some of these cards that are on the lower end, and maybe a month from now, that's probably where I would want to jump in and say, okay, this card is under $2. It looks cool. It looks kind of powerful if it gets the right pieces. Maybe you want to pick up a play set of these for less than $10 and be ready when Dominaria comes out. Because on top of Rivals of Ixalan being at an unfortunate time, not a whole lot of the product is going to get opened. So that's kind of where I stand on standard.
Yeah. Now, we, you know, the Discord and just kind of, I guess, everyone at this point has been kind of a buzz. What to pick up. It kind of seemed like a lot of different things were increasing, albeit, you know, not huge percentages. I mean, we did see Kumena suddenly like increase a fair bit from pre-order prices. I know they were around, you know, the $12, $15 mark. They kind of were firmly in the $20, $23 mark for a little while for the last few days. Jade Light Ranger saw another big bump. But for by and large, I mean, around here anyway, and with the insiders, we kind of talked about a lot of the cards that ended up seeing any kind of or garnered any kind of interest. And that was mainly, you know, Jade Light Ranger. We did talk about Kumena. We did talk about the Phoenix and stuff like that, which I didn't really even like, but people apparently did. But, you know, I'm a little weary about going back to previous blocks, because we kind of noticed this trend now that older block cards don't tend to re-spike. It would have to really take a lot, and they would normally have to be a mythic. But I'm definitely fine with going back to at least just Ixalan, because like you said earlier, I mean, Ixalan and, well, now Rivals kind of didn't really have a lot of interest, and they didn't really solve a lot of the issues that Standard had. I mean, you incorporated some cards that was great, Search of Azkanta you mentioned, but it didn't really deal with a lot of the problems that were in the format. Like I said, we're already seeing some brewing. I got kind of a statement out of you. We took a really quick take on the bannings when it happened. You talked about cards like Ripjaw Raptor. I mean, are those the kind of cards that you are now like, this is probably not going to stay the price tag that it is now?
Yeah, Ripjaw Raptor is an interesting one to me, because when I first read that card in Ixalan, I said, this is insane. This is almost format warping, because it reminded me not of like Siege Rhino level power.
Right.
But it is a 4/5 for 4. It's much easier to cast than a Siege Rhino. It doesn't have the life drain, which is huge. But this was a time period when Walking Ballista and Winding Constrictor were a thing. So you could sit behind a Walking Ballista anywhere past turn 4 and go, all right, I'll ping my Ripjaw Raptor and draw a card. And you could do it multiple times. And the longer the game went, you could just basically draw your deck and generate infinite value over time. So that was one of the cards on my checklist, and it still is. It's still under $5. It's probably not that hard to trade for unless you have a bunch of people in your area who are building dinosaur decks. And I feel like that'll eventually see some play. But that's only one of the examples. Like, if you look at the Ixalan set, kind of at its core, there's a whole bunch of cards that are fairly underappreciated, which I'm actually pulling up right now.
Rivals, I mean, we're talking about release day. There's like a single mythic that's over $10 at this point. I mean, you look at the two Planeswalkers, but they are drastically declining even right before release day. And now they're really going to tank, because I don't even feel either of them has a strong case. Maybe Hawatli these days, but...
The worst crime I've seen, so to speak, in this set. And now, I'm a big Rakdos player. For those of you who don't know who I am, I created a black-red mid-range archetype in Modern because I was playing Demigod of Revenge when I was in Florida, and I won a 1K and had a pretty good undefeated streak going for like a couple of months, where the deck was just really well-positioned. It's not as well-positioned anymore as it was, and I'm on something else right now. I've been playing a different Rakdos deck. So when I heard about Angrath being spoiled, if you know the history of black, red, and planeswalkers, we've had really good mono black and really good mono red planeswalkers in the past. We've had Liliana of the Veil, Liliana of the Last Hope, Chandra Torch of Defiance, even Chandra Flamecaller and Chandra Pyromancer were not bad cards. And then I read Angrath the Flamechained and was just so underwhelmed, like drastically underwhelmed. I think honestly, this card, if it had a -2 ability for its active treason, or it came in at 5. Either one of those makes it reasonable. But I can't justify, especially in current standard, with Chandra Torch of Defiance also being in standard, why would you even want Angrath? Chandra just does what he does, but better and faster, and wins the game way harder. And on top of that, Angrath's ult doesn't necessarily do anything. It gets hosed by graveyard removal. So it's definitely never going to see eternal play. It theoretically can see some standard play because there's not a lot of graveyard hate in standard, but then you have to have a deck built around it. So I could see it as like a Haymaker when Glorybringer rotates out, but that depends what we get in Dominaria when we get to that point.
Right.
And if you look at the rest of Ixalan right now, other than Search for Azkanta, which I kind of just offshoot mentioned that a second ago, that's by far the most expensive card in Ixalan. Carnage Tyrants dipped all the way down to $14. Vraska Relic Seeker is still $12, which is a very strange price tag for that to be holding, because the only play I remember it seeing really was in Abzan tokens and in some of the control decks would splash green for it. So I guess I can justify a $12 price tag on that. Nothing else in the set even hits $8. So a lot of the things are way down. Legion's Landing's under $5. Ripjaw Raptor's under $5.
And that just doesn't seem right to me. I don't know. I mean, you, like you said, you consult two stores. I mean, how much stock are you putting in Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan?
I put very little stock in Ixalan. I did that on set release, and I stand by that. Some of the best cards in the set either finally hit their peak, which Search for Azkanta was at the top of my list, or got banned. I liked Rampaging Ferocidon, and that's gone now. The one card, I think, other than Ripjaw Raptor that I've really notated, and I know I've kind of been on a green tangent here, is Death
Gorge. That's okay.
Death Gorge Scavenger is insanely strong. It stops graveyard decks. It's a consistent beater. It's a life gain engine. It's reasonably costed, and it's underpriced now. It's down to $364. Which is fairly low for a card that could wind up being a staple and a good curve out as an additional 3-drop to, let's say Constrictor comes back, like actually becomes one of the best decks in the format, where you go Walking Ballista, Winding Constrictor, Rishkar comes back, and your other 3-drop is Death Gorge Scavenger as kind of a nice little curve filler. That could definitely see some play. It wouldn't hurt to pick those up, because on the low end on TCG, you can get them for like $2.
Do you think it would be better than Jadelight Ranger?
Not necessarily, but I think the Jade Light Ranger is in this weird spot where people want to just build Merfolk straight up. I think the Jade Light Ranger at its fundamental core is a very strong card. But once it lands, like, all right, so you're on turn three, right? You haven't really, yep. Let's say you played a two drop and it got killed by a removal spell. Perfectly reasonable in a game. So turn three, all right, I'm going to Jade Light Ranger. I'm going to explore. I'm going to get this land and put a counter on it. Those are my two explores. So what you did was you played a Rogue Refiner. You played a 3-2 for three that drew a card.
Yep.
So I see Jade Light Ranger as a good card. But again, fundamentally, that in the history of Magic won't usually hold a heavy price tag. I can see Jade Light Ranger on release and after a few days, if it gets really popular early, spiking to like 10, 11 bucks, but never higher. And if it went higher than that, I'd be extraordinarily surprised. And if we came back in 2 months and this card was still over $8, again, I'd be very surprised. Maybe it's just because it's a rare and it does what Rogue Refiner does, because they need it. They need a card that does something like that. It has a little bit more utility in theory. You can just sit there and play a 4-3 for three if you need to, but that still dies to a Harness Lightning for no energy or in a Braid. Or you can, if you're really lucky, you can draw two cards and they're both lands. So in that way, you can keep three landers with that card and make it, you know, work. But I can't justify the price tag on a lot of these. I'm still looking over Rivals of Ixalan and Ixalan both, like, in real time as we're talking. And I see some cool cards that have, you know, chances to be a little
better. Yeah, because, the last thing, and we kind of all came to this conclusion, you know, we did pick up a few cards, you know, we looked at some cards that were generally just really cheap. Maverin Fane came to mind just because it was like 75 cents and there's not much, I don't think it goes much lower, especially with all the new hype around Standard. And I think it's just a good build around card that's in an archetype that people generally want to play. And it saw some increase already. But the last thing we kind of wanted to do was, since everything is kind of, you know, out there now, and there's so much, at least more possibility. I don't know about so much possibility, but there's definitely more possibility. I just think the last thing we want to do is just recommend buying like a basket full of stuff. And then 75-80% of that just doesn't end up working out. That's great and all when a lot of the cards are like near bulk. But I mean, if you're legitimately talking about like $2, $3, $4 cards and you're buying a basket of this stuff, I mean, you're really going to get hurt way.
I don't recommend buying a basket of any Standard card right now that I can see. Like, not a single one. If you look at the reason Ixalan is so undervalued, it's because the lands that were in basically the staple set of a block, they're a reprint. And they're like, what, I think the seventh or eighth time the Czech lands have been reprinted. Like some crazy amount, depending on the land. Like, Sun Petal had it also an additional print in, what, Slivers, I think. So did
something Rupon like that, yeah.
So those lands, like, a lot of, look at sets previously. Khans of Tarkir had fetch lands. That was a big deal. You had Battle for Zendikar, which didn't have, you know, the what do you call them, the Tango lands or whatever. Yeah. A lot of people argue to the Battle lands over the name of what those should be. They are one ofs in some decks. Like, you'll see a Prairie Stream in blue white Emeria in Modern, or like I played a Smoldering Martian black red Blood Moon, because for some decks it's really easy to just fetch it out and say, oh, it's turn three, this is a Badlands, haha. But in most cases, people open Battle for Zendikar to hit the Expeditions. And then we got the enemy fast lands. That was why Kaladesh is so bonkers. Like, a blue-red fast land and the fact that that was allowed to be printed blows my mind, even to this day, that Spire Bluff Canal is only the price it is because of Teemer Energy. Like, the day that those came out and the promos got to under, like, $15, I think they were at, like, 12 at one point, like 11 or 12 for the promos. I picked up two playsets. Easy. I traded for them. Every one of them I could find. My example, the easiest one I can lean on, is Blackleaf Cliffs, the same type of land.
Yep.
Blackleaf Cliffs for, how long? I want to say 5 years was a $3 card.
Yep.
It was
for the longest time, yeah.
Or just from when it was printed beyond its Standard, and then Modern Jund got big, and it went from 3 to 10 to 20 overnight.
Yep.
Because it's a land that comes into play untapped, no punishment, early game in, you know, Modern, Legacy, Vintage. A lot of times these formats dip down to where they're turn three formats, turn four formats. You almost never get punished for playing one of those lands tapped, because if you do, you're flooded anyway. Like Inspiring Vantage, for example, from Kaladesh. Why would you not play four of those and burn? Because if you hit four lands, your win percentage, no matter what, is going into the toilet. You almost have no chance to win if you draw four lands and burn. That's just the way the deck functions. So it's really free to be like, all right, I have perfect fixing. I don't have to hurt myself. And that's really big in a format where like burn, fighting, burn. You don't want to give away life points. So Spire Bluff Canal is the biggest one to me. Blue red historically, if I had to pick one card in standard that I said, make sure you have at least 4 to 8 of these in your binder. You have a red, blue fast land. Statistically speaking, those are the two best colors in Magic's history, red and blue. And when you pair them together, they make unbelievably broken things. You have Sneak and Show in Legacy. Right now, you have Gift Storm running rampant in Modern. None of this is really a surprise. The control decks right now are Jeskai, and they're playing some amounts of these lands when they need to fix.
Right. So that's the safe. Like, if you're looking to buy something in Standard, buy it because this is going to be worth something down the line, not just because of a banning.
Exactly. And on top of that, I don't recommend picking up almost anything in Standard right now for about a month, month and a half. That's when you can really look at the format and say, all right, I had this idea for a card. It's very not likely going to spike within that, you know, month, month and a half time. It can. Like, you might miss your window if you're really concerned. Like, I don't think Spire Bluff Canal, even if it did spike, would hit anywhere above 15 in the next month. I also wouldn't be surprised to see it dip down below 6 if Standard just really isn't being played a lot, if there's not a heavy amount of demand for a format that, let's face it, for the last year or so, has not had a whole lot of demand.
And we have a Modern Pro Tour, so it's just like there are factors working against it, even with an unban, or even with a, you know, a ban, even though I agree with it. I just don't think, like, the timing was good, but it's still, from a financial perspective, I think there are things working against it.
Let's take any example in Standard right now of a card that you think might see some play. Here's a really good example. Revel in Riches. The Ixalan, what is currently a bulk rare, 4 and a black, yep. Get 10 treasure tokens, win the game. It wouldn't surprise me if blue-black control that wins with treasure tokens became a deck. Now, do I think that that's a reasonable thing that's going to happen in the next month? Probably not. But it's 80 cents. You have no reason to pick that up right now. And I know that sounds like a low investment, but you could probably trade around and get those for nickels or in throw-ins and trades. Cards that are a little higher right now, Hostage Taker, stick with the black blue train. That's a $5 card that used to be 18 bucks. It could dip even further. It could go down to $3, $2. Cards that just came out in Rivals of Ixalan that might, you know, catch your eye.
Yeah, it did hit that kind of those kind of prices.
Yeah, it spiked really hard. If you liked Huatli Radiant Champion because you're a ramp player, you're really just a Celestia guy. That's $8. You can probably wait a month and catch those for $5. I mean, here's the most mind blowing price in Magic to me. Do you know the price of a Tybalt the Fiendblooded off the top of your head? Just shooting the dark.
I think it's $5.
Not even close. It's a little close. It's low. It's 260. Now, this is what blows my mind. A card that is seeing play in Modern, Jace Architect of Thought, is cheaper than Tybalt at 246 for the dual deck one. Planeswalkers, no matter how good they look, even in Standard, will almost always tank down unless they're format warping. Chandra Torch of Defiance did the opposite. She came out at 18 bucks. Now I think she's, what, 40? Something insane. I don't know if she's gone down or not.
Yeah, it kind of...
30 that, now.
Yeah, Chandra's price kind of went all over the place. We have a really quick question. Efren, do you like Ruin Raider?
Oh, do I like Ruin Raider?
Yeah, is that a good pickup? Because, you know, that was one of the cards that we discussed, but we discussed that in, I think, in the same breath as Glint Sleeve Siphoner, and the Glint Sleeve Siphoner is now seeing a ton of play.
Well, Glintsleeve Siphoner right now, to be fair, is abusing energy at its core, which, as we already discussed, is essentially a broken mechanic. It's something that they've had enough difficulty balancing to where it got banned out.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of the last cards that is really utilizing energy to its fullest extent.
Ruin Raider is a weird one for me, because if you look at the history of cards that are similar to Dark Confidant, but just don't quite hit Dark Confidant level, they constantly try to reprint that card, but slightly weaker. I'll give you a perfect example from experience. When Born of the Gods came out, I had an employee that worked for me who said, oh, Painseer is going to be huge. And he was picking them up at $5 a piece on pre-release weekend. Do you remember what happened to Painseer? Cards worth 50 cents.
Yeah.
They did the same thing with, I'm trying to think of other cards that did that. Sin Prodigy was kind of like that.
Yeah. And what was the what was the mythic way back when in Gatecrash? Everyone was going crazy about that card.
Oh.
Yeah. The Vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I remember people were going Dusk crazy. Dusk Mantle Seer. Everyone was going nuts over that card.
Yeah, I played Dusk Mantle Seer for a while, but it had nothing to do with its ability. It had to do with it was a 4-4.
That card was like pre-ordering for like legitimately $15.
Well, if you're Aurelia's Fury was $25.
Oh my God.
I sold one for $25 cash pre-release weekend. I think card was like $1.50 when it rotated. Ruin Raider. Okay, so you can't really go necessarily wrong with a card like Ruin Raider because you're paying less than a dollar. It's at 60 cents. The odds of it spiking heavily. I like the card in theory the same way that I liked Sin Prodder. I think that they have a reasonable spot. But I do have a kind of a broad statement to make about Standard. I think that a lot of times Standard becomes stagnant because a couple of top players will do well with the same deck. Yep. And realize that it is a good enough value deck. Like Teemer Energy is the perfect example of this. Innovation stops in its tracks. So where you might have a format that can be solved, it can't actually be solved. It just, there's laziness will happen. Overproduction of results will happen. For 9 months, back in 2015, I was playing blue-red Thopters with Impact Tremors as a 4-of in my deck. I never stopped doing that. This is when Rally was huge. This is when Bant Company was huge in Standard. My deck had an 85% win rate. But nobody else played it because nobody wanted to take the time to fine-tune it. And I had some weird deck choices. I was playing a couple Foundry of the Consoles. Wandering Fumarole was a win condition. I'm playing Impact Tremor, so you have Pio, Whirler Rogue, a couple other randomizer cards. I played a one of Disperse in the main, which used to blow out Westvale Abbey players. I will bounce your land. So there's always ways to win games with cards like Ruin Raider. I played Sin Prodder for a little while and had some success with it as well because it is card value. But I don't look at Ruin Raider and think to myself, financially, this card is going to heavily increase. Now, if you wanted to pick them up just because you want to attempt playing the card, you're making an investment that's cheaper than a Diet Coke at Arby's. So I can't really say don't do it. But don't drink the Diet Coke, drink the four Ruin Raiders.
Yeah. Like when you're done, just grind them up.
As far as financial investment goes, there's never, ever going to be a time where a card is less than a dollar, is a rare, and has some kind of value as a creature. So if it has more power or toughness than it is mana cost or equivalent. So like it's a 3-drop and it has 3 power, or it's a 4-drop and it has 4 power. If it has an ability that's an upside, I very scarcely will say don't do it if it is under a dollar, because your realistic life investment is you won't feel bad about having them at the end of the day. It has nowhere to go but up. It's never really going to get cheaper than 50 cents.
So really quick, just a couple last points here, Peep, so we can wrap it up. So we're kind of pushing that that time frame. Yeah, really, really quick question from the audience. Do you see any modern decks getting better with Rivals of Ixalan? So real quick.
So the easy one is Merfolk. That's the easiest thing I can say. Kumena is an interesting card, and everyone's going to look at her draw card ability because it's a creature that says draw a card on it. I'm looking at the Gavinny Township ability. Let's say you're you're playing your Merfolk deck, and you don't draw Spreading Seas, or you're not playing Seas Claim and you don't draw Spreading Seas. So your creatures don't just have unblockable. And you wind up in a wall where somebody drops like a 4-4 lifelinker and you have a couple of 3-3s. Well, at some point in time, you're going to be able to just buff your team enough to one-shot kill them. So Kumena has a spot in that deck as a 1 or 2 of for sure. Jade Light Ranger, I would also say, has a good slot in the... Now, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about fully, the green-blue Merfolk version is the one that I'm specifically... Like, this is a newer thing with Botanical Sanctum, and it was playing Branchwalker, I think it's called. Merfolk Branchwalker is a 4-of.
And the 1-drop.
Yeah, so they had a lot of... That deck has already kind of been putting up some results. Merfolk, I can't see getting worse, for sure. Like, that's definitely Kumena's... That's the reason Kumena, I think, is a $23 card. So that's for sure. There's some other very interesting cards in this set. A lot of people, again, I'm going to point at Blood Sun and say, oh, the Blood Moon decks now have a way to get Blood Moons 5-8. Trust me when I say this, I play Blood Moon. You do not want to play Blood Sun. 4 Blood Moons is usually enough. Half the time you wind up boarding out 1 or 2 copies because when you draw them in multiples and can't get rid of them, it's terrible. So I don't see that particularly buffing a deck.
Yeah.
It is possible you start to see some wonky dinosaur modern builds from some of the stompy players. I would not be surprised to see some of those decks pick up a little bit. Jade Light Ranger, if it saw play, would be in the mono green stompy kind of tier 2 deck. And the other card to keep an eye on is the 1-drop, the new Explore. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Oh yeah, I forget the name of that. Path of Discovery?
No, that's the four drop enchantment.
Oh god, yeah.
Enter the unknown.
There we go.
Yeah, that seeing play in the Scape Shift decks as a one or two of wouldn't surprise me too much. A lot of times people look at Scape Shift decks and assume they don't have creatures, but Sakura Tribe Scout or Elder, I'm sorry, Sakura Tribe Elder is a creature. They've been playing Pia and Karan, and they've been playing Obstinate Baeloth. So being able to let them draw you a card and play a land, it's like casting an Explore for one mana, so it might replace Explore. I don't know if that's better or worse yet. I would need a Scape Shift player to tell me.
Yep.
But that's okay, about it.
Really quick. I know there's a Pro Tour. Name one card that you're kind of you're eyeing, or you know, you say you kind of you work with both stores that you. What's one card that you're like, hey, we should probably pick this up for the Pro Tour? What's one modern card and one standard card?
Ooh, all right, that's a tough one. All right, so I'm gonna go as a player right now.
Okay.
As a standard player, I stand by what I said about Ripjaw Raptor. I still think that card's very strong. As a modern player, I'm eyeing Reaver Ambush. Now, this is not financial. This is just to have the cards when I want them. Reaver Ambush is the 2 and a black exile target creature with power 3 or less. Surprisingly relevant exiling cards in modern. And for 3 mana to hit a good chunk of the more aggravating cards. Like, if you exile a Snapcaster Mage, they can't Koligan's Command it back. So there's my perfect example there. As far as financially speaking, as a store, cards I would be picking up kind of on the cheap right now, that is a tricky one. That's what I think it is. I don't hate Hadana's Climb, the enchantment from Rivals of Ixalan, the one blue-green that can flip and buff creatures and give them flying.
Okay.
That is not as bad of a card as you might expect. Also, Merfolk Mistbinder. I'm kind of on the blue-green tangent for availability in cards. So, and I know that sounds kind of strange coming from a Rakdos player, but I would want to make sure I had Merfolk Mistbinders in stock, because you're going to get at least 3 or 4 people who come in and say, well, I need 4 of this uncommon. That's something I would want to have in stock, and since it's $1.70, I'd probably pick them up at, you know, 50 cents credit, and a lot of people who don't play Merfolk will unload them happily, because you will sell that card. It's not huge profits, but it's better than nothing.
Fair enough.
Yeah. On the modern side, I'd actually right now be looking not in Rivals so much. I don't see a lot from Rivals that I would want to own. I just see as a store myself getting bit by picking up.
We toss around the Collective Brutality choice when Tarkan and I still think that's a number one pickup.
Collective Brutality is a great pickup if you can find them. The problem is it's already kind of hit its point where it's spiked.
Yeah.
That's from previous standard, technically, because it's from Eldritch Moon. And it's already at $13, so I feel like people have kind of missed the boat on that one if that was to happen.
I think it's on its way to, like, $25.
It
I wouldn't be surprised by the time modern Pro Tour in full swing that it's a $25 card.
I wouldn't be surprised either. If I'm looking specifically current standard and staying by the rules, Concealed Courtyard is one that I'm looking at, because I think that black-white tokens is a very metagame pick, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a black-white tokens deck pop up in Modern again, and that is mana-fixing for that deck. Saheeli Rai is under $5, and there are still Saheeli Copycat combo decks running around in Modern, as well as other just blue-red Kiki combo
decks. I like that one, too. I also like Nahiri at $6.
Nahiri's down to $6.
$5, $6, yeah.
Yeah, you're half cheating on me because you're hitting stuff that rotated. But yeah, I have Nahiri at 8. I would still happily pick up Nahiri under 10. I think that card, again, that's going to be one of those that's a long-term investment for those of you listening. Sure. I don't see a world where Nahiri really gets reprinted. I see her similar to Tamiyo the Moonsage, where she'll never go down in price. But Nahiri has much more potential to see play in decks that are just dominant. You could see red-white Prison Moon come back again. Restore Balance is a deck that plays 4 Nahiris and an Emrakul. I've been playing a version of that with Metalwork Colossus in my testing. It needs more testing, but it's possible. Nahiri is definitely a great pickup. And another card not to forget about is Aetherhub. A lot of people want to just forget that Tendo Icebridge got printed. So if you can pick up, just make sure you have a playset. They're cheap. Don't forget about the card because it's very strong. And then if I was going ever the foil route, if you could get them for cheap, and this is more of a pet card for me, but Blossoming Defense. 2/2 and Hexproof for 1 mana. That is definitely an infect almost necessity, as well as we'll likely see play in several other decks. And then my last one I'll give you is Panharmonicon is now under $3. That's more of a casual EDH card, but it spiked to $8 once just from casual players, seeing virtually no play in standard. I wouldn't be surprised to see it spike again.
All right. That's a lot to keep in mind. I think the one thing I'm going to leave it off on, we're going to wrap it up here, folks. I actually have been seeing a lot of testing of Rabinet Red starting to adopt white, because why not? And Path of Metal, from what I've been hearing and what I've been seeing, has been testing very well. It's almost kind of like unfair, but people are, I think it's kind of one of those all-in decks that will be very kind of very huge once standard kind of, and everything is, you know, the bans are in place. Everyone's kind of going towards, you know, aggro, and everyone's kind of shifting. I think that card can increase for a short period amount of time.
I'll definitely agree with you on that one, for not the reasons people would assume, but that's the new Ramunap Ruins.
Yeah, because it's nuts.
Yeah, it flips over and pings things. And if you can build the deck around it, there's that new uncommon Velociraptor card from Rivals of the Swarm. 2-mana 3/3s are always powerful.
They sure are.
So yeah, I'm behind you. Path of Metal's good.
Path of Metal, the red-white flip enchantment. All right, folks. Hey, Pete, thanks so much for your time. That's going to wrap up this quick cast that should be around 35, 40 minutes. So when in editing, that should be around, you know, 30 minutes. So thanks so much, Pete. We will do this again soon.
Thanks for having me, Chaz.